Remember the first time you saw a race car on an open trailer? Maybe it was full of dirt, tire marks, and other battle scars. You wondered where it had been, and more importantly, where it was going next. Every open trailer has a story, and we're here to tell it. Welcome to the Open Trailer Podcast. Hey, welcome back to another edition of the show. It is stage number 3 of the Sanborns on Open Trailer Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Austin, and if you're a regular listener who has enjoyed the guest that achieved their success in the 60s and 70s and 80s, and Trevor is like the new kid on the block. But we have to, and I have to check myself too. Trevor's been at it for 20 years now. There's an entire generation of listeners who grew up with Trevor Sanborn. And if that blows your mind, some of the stuff we talk about in stage number 3 will as well. And we talked a little bit about it in the last episode. Driver development deals. In the early 2000s, NASCAR was full of them. This is before Buy-A-Ride. I mean, you got in on talent. Heck, Jack Roush had the Gong Show, which Johnny Clark was on. You know, one thing we didn't cover in the podcast is when Trevor tested at Daytona for ARCA, or in an ARCA car, and I knew that, but we forgot to talk about it. And that leads me to my next point. We're going to rectify that. There have been a number of guests who I'll follow up with, or I'll just see, and we'll talk about the podcast, and they'll say, you know what, that was a lot of fun, but I forgot to tell this story, or I meant to hit on this, or I meant to thank this person. And I get it. I mean, how many times have you been in a conversation with someone, and as soon as you hang up the phone, or you leave the room, you're like, up, you know, whether it's, even if it's an argument, especially if it's an argument, oh man, it stinks when you're arguing with somebody, and you think of your best haymaker 20 seconds after you're supposed to be done the fight. And you can't run back into the room and restart the fight just because you thought of something clever, right? I mean, some people do, but anyway, different topic for a different day. I'm getting off track. So Patreon, we're going to start a thing called, I was going to call it "Shit I Meant to Say," but then I realized there's probably a better way to do it. Let's just call it PS. And it won't be an every week thing. But, you know, if you've been on the show and you've thought to yourself, I really wanted to say this, let me know, because we'll do like a little 5-minute follow-up, and that will be for Patreon members only. So that will be some exclusive content that that I can throw your way. So there'll be that coming up soon. So patreon.com/opentrailerpodcast, $5 a month, and, you know, thank you. Just simply you listening to the show every single week and maybe telling a friend, that helps more than you know. Screenshotting that you've listened to the episode, putting it on your you know, your social story, and you know, just stuff like that too. But yeah, definitely some exclusive content for Patreon coming soon, in addition to the early drop and some merch. And speaking of PS, I want to do my own little PS for this one, because we recorded the episode about a month ago. And the tease for this episode was something that went down at Beach Ridge between Mike Rowe and Trevor, which has, again, become the rivalry in 2023, but it dates back quite a few years. And I was completely wrong. I said that it happened the night that Beach Ridge, Andy Cusack, announced that the track was closing. And I was so sold on that. Matter of fact, Trevor, you'll hear in the episodes, like, nah, I think that was a few years prior. And in my mind, I was, because drivers sometimes, as great as their memories are, like, I'm pretty good with dates. And this is one where I completely got it wrong, because a person who was involved in the other team that was involved, that was a part of that exchange, was like, no, that was definitely a few years prior to 2021. It was 2019. So I was wrong on that one. But it's still a great story. So we'll talk about Mike Rowe, and that's only a little piece of what Trevor has to talk about in this episode. There's definitely some racing stuff, as I mentioned, the driver development deal that never came to pass. There, and speaking of pass, there's some more pass racing, And something that Trevor went through, I mean, Trevor almost, you know, he might not be here today as someone that you cheer for or cheer against on the racetrack, even just doing this podcast. Trevor almost didn't make it in a very bizarre and rare condition or incident that happened to him and his body. And I think a lot of us followed it on social media. But what was it like to be inside the mind of someone going through that? We'll dig into it in this episode. And it's not all gloom and doom. There's some fun stuff, too. Glad that you're here. Glad you're supporting. And let's get to it. It's Trevor Sanborn, along with Corey Sanborn, stage number three on Open Trailer Podcast. Yeah, tell me about that race 101 thing. I think some people know a little bit about it, but how does that happen, and then how does it fall apart?
I found it online at one point, or someone shared something, and I found it on Facebook or whatever, and, you know, I got on the 101 website and sent a little, I don't know, resume or something in, and he teaches kids about setups and, you know, driving and, you know, everything to do with a race car, roll centers, all the geometry.
Like, so like a Jay Cushman, like, kind of.
Yeah, but way more in depth. Mm-hmm. Over my head, but I wanted to go
but
to it anyways.
He had
and
an
learn.
Advantage when he got there because Jay and Brian Burgess, who we call Big Boy, was Moody's crew chief. And, you know, he was the first one that taught us when you're measuring something, you measure it to the 32nd, not the 16th.
How many races do you drive for him?
Blanchard, probably like three or four, maybe five.
Why only that many?
Well, I ended up...
I remember joking with you because you were going back to Orange County, and I'm like, phew, I don't know. Two for two at Orange County.
And we got wrecked.
You're going to get let down.
Mm-hmm. I was running fifth there and got wrecked by... I was on the outside of someone, and they pushed me up too close to the wall and put me in the wall, but... We had a great time with Tony. Tony's a super intelligent guy.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot about shocks from him. And I ended up moving home about June of that year. I was like, I don't like the heat. I miss everyone. I don't know if I want to be down here.
Our grandfather just died.
So I came home. And then that was 2013. In 2013, Sally Graves calls me, and which is Sally Bolduc now.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
She says, I want to build a brand new car. Dale's going to build a brand new car, and I want you to drive it. I said, okay. I said, well, I can go work on it, you know, this winter, every weekend. So Corey and I volunteered to go up there every weekend and work on the race car. Dale and them, you know, just assembling it. Dale and DJ already built the chassis and stuff. Mm-hmm. And we did that, and we only ended up running three races with Sally because she just couldn't afford to go any further. Yeah. And she sold the car. And I didn't have any money to go buy a race car. So I didn't race much for two or three years. I did on and off, which you know as well as I do. If you don't stay racing, you can't keep up with the times. Whether you're a driver driving it or with setup, you've got to keep up with both.
14, I think, was when you went and raced with Tommy and Rick.
Yeah, in 2014, you went with Tommy Nason and Rick Lockwood. And in 15, and then Cassius got out of Height Chevrolet's car, and Brian Burgess was crew chief in that, which is a good friend of mine. He called and said, you know, you should really call Corey and get in this car for the 250. And I got in it, and we did really well. We got in a wreck at the end. I got a little too anxious, I guess, but...
I forgot that you drove that 77.
Yeah, three races.
Yeah. How come that didn't develop into something more?
Corey was... kind of on his way out. His son Jackson, he wanted to do more things with him. He was getting old enough to do different things, hunting and fishing and four-wheeling, and I think that changed Corey a little bit. And you know, I don't think he was happy the way things were going with the race team, which I don't blame him, as far as, you know, he spent a lot of money and wasn't getting the results. And I don't know that it was driving efforts or anything. It's just, you know,
I think he was just frustrated all the way around.
I remember that.
Weren't Big Boy or his driving or anything. He just, I think he'd had enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes that happens.
But he's a great guy. He, to this day, every few weeks, he texts me mm-hmm. and asks me how I'm doing and checks on the racing.
Really?
He's one of the only ones.
That was a good team to race with. Like, if they bought a carburetor, they bought two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they just, unlimited budget.
He's a great guy.
And great people.
Hmm.
He's one of the only people when I was on my deathbed in the hospital in 2020 that sent in a huge bouquet. He is the only one of flowers with, you know, a card and like I didn't expect none of that. You know, I don't know. Just thinking of me, I guess. Corey's a great guy.
You know, you mentioned your near death experience in 2020. You know, I think a lot of us saw it and were worried about everything via social media.
Mm-hmm.
From your perspective, take us through the descent. Like, what was the first thing that happened where you were like, something's a little off? And then how do you end up in Maine Med where you get to where you were?
Well, a few weeks prior to me going into Maine Med, I went into Maine Med maybe a week, 10 days prior and said, I have something wrong, you know, I have back pain, like mid-back, and just,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, it just, they sent me home, they put me through a CAT scan and sent me home and said, there's nothing wrong with you, and then they gave me prednisone or something, and nothing worked.
Told you to go see a chiropractor, right?
Yeah, told me to go see a chiropractor.
Was it lower back muscle, or is it?
Mid-back, but on the side, and I don't know. They chiropractor, nothing helped. I was having like, I lay down in bed at night and couldn't breathe good. Mm. And I had wicked pain in my back.
Yeah, it's your lungs.
It come to me one night.
Yeah.
I went to bed and I said, laid there half hour. I said, something's wrong with me, Nikki.
Yeah.
She goes, well, do you want me to call the ambulance? I said, I don't know. I got up, I went on the porch. It was fall, so it was cool out. And I went on the porch and got some cool air. And I was just, I couldn't stay still. I had so much pain. I said, you need to call your brother Mario right now. I said, I'm not waiting for an ambulance. He can drive me to the hospital faster.
Mm-hmm.
So he come and got me. He's only a couple miles up the road.
And you're in Parsons Field.
Yeah. Yes, the Parsons Field Limerick line. I was living in one of my dad's houses at that point. Yeah. So he comes and picks me up. And we're flying down through Waterboro. And I said, You gotta get me, pull into the fire department in the Waterboro by Lakeside.
By Jim's Getty.
We gotta,
Waterboro.
I need something. I can't take this pain.
You couldn't even go to Quick Care.
No.
Because that's in Waterboro,
I'm like,
too.
We gotta do this right now, Mario. He's like, all right. So we pulled right up. And for some reason, they saw us pull up, and they opened the overhead door, pulled the ambulance right out, got me in it, put me some IVs, and,
wow. You
know, whatever they gave me, morphine or something for pain.
It was like a pit stop.
It was like a pit stop. And they trucked me right to Maine Med.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I was in Biddeford.
They took you to Sanford first, didn't they?
They did take me to Sanford first.
Yeah,
that's
closer.
Then they booted me from Sanford, some other ambulance later on, that night, up to Biddeford.
Yeah.
I didn't go to Maine Med. And they put me in the intensive care. They put a hole in my back. They put me in the CAT scan thing and all that. And they said, your whole left side lung is collapsed. It's full of fluid. And you have double pneumonia. You have sepsis. And one other thing. I don't remember what it was. And I don't know what none of this means.
Right.
You know, and I can't breathe. I got to breathe on a tube.
Staph infection, wasn't it?
Yeah.
How fast did this happen? I mean, once Mario was taking you to the hospital.
Oh, it was instant. Like,
so if Mario hadn't driven you to the hospital, you might not be here.
Within a couple hours, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they told me I was within a half a day of probably dying if I didn't get in there. But you couldn't even withstand the pain, so I'd have to go in there anyways.
And you're a guy, and having been through, still going through being an experience as being a male, we're stubborn as hell. You're a race car driver, so you're extra stubborn.
And he never smoked a day in his life.
Right.
So
right.
It's not like it was.
Yeah, you're a healthy guy.
Thing.
I don't drink or smoke. Like, I don't know. So I go in there, and then they're like, well, we got to. There's two ways we can do this. We can try to, you know, put a hole in your back and suck all that fluid out, or we got to open you up, like cavity. Like, we don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So we did the other way. And the first night I was there, I was on oxygen to breathe because I couldn't breathe without it.
What's that experience like, too?
It is one messed up experience.
Really?
Because you don't know if you're going to be able to breathe right again.
Mm.
You know, it ain't good feeling when you can't move and you can't breathe. Like, you take that off for a second, you're like... And they're telling me my lungs are at like 92%, but even at 92%, you can't breathe on your own.
Mm.
It's a weird feeling.
And how long did that feel? How long were you on support?
I was on the oxygen for 3 or 4 days before I could get on my own. And then they had me do breathing exercise. And then my lungs started to open back up because they pulled well over a gallon of fluid out of me. And they had to change it in different positions. They had to put 3 different holes in my back over the course of 14 days to drain fluid in different areas that was around my lung. And that was so painful. It was just an awful, awful experience.
Were you a dad yet?
Yes. Talon turned 1 when I was in the hospital.
So just take me through those emotions.
That was a bad day. Yeah.
And being a brand new dad, you had just gotten married within, a couple
of
years.
No, we weren't married at that point.
Okay, so but you and
me and Nick were been together a year or two at that point, a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just awful. You know, Nikki come in and saw me every day. No one else, it's COVID. No one else is allowed in the hospitals.
So the rest of us aren't allowed there.
All we can do is put a 29 on our profile pic.
Which a lot of people did.
Yeah.
So that was pretty
humbling.
I had a lot
of support. I had a great bunch of people. So many people reach out to me and kept me going. And, it was
Andrew
great
Hicken
feeling.
Messaged me from Canada, concerned about him. Thought that was cool.
Who was the person that reached out that you were most surprised by?
I'm trying to think. I don't really. Corey Height was pretty supportive. He stayed with me most days. He was texting me. My wife Nick. She was obviously all over everything every day. She was very helpful. But
she was very educational. And I think sometimes, especially in the social media world, it's very easy for people to speculate. And say, well, this is happening, and then, it's kind of like it's a super version of I'll tell you one thing, then you tell Corey, and by the time the story gets back to me, it's completely different.
I mean,
she was very concise and very forward with everything and factual what was going on.
When you're laying there in that bed, you honestly, even though you have all the time in the world, when you don't feel good, you don't even want to pick the phone up and talk or text anyone. And that's kind of how it was for the first 5 or 6 days in there. I didn't want to talk, or do anything. But I would obviously I'd tell Nikki, she's like, well, I want to let people know how you're feeling. I said, that's fine. Just, post something up. But I can't reply to people.
And I'm not going to do a live
video.
I'm
so messed up.
Right.
Yeah. But that was a scary part of my life.
Were you able to see your son? Were you able to see Talon? Mm-hmm. How long did you?
FaceTime.
How long?
2 weeks before I saw him.
And how long had he been alive at that point?
A year.
So
that's how I went in on
his
like
his birthday is October 1st, and you went in like the last week of September.
I think I went in the 27th, maybe, of September. Mm. So I spent. She did a FaceTime with a little hat on and a little cake for me, though.
Yeah.
So I got to see it, which was cool.
Do you think that you could have gotten through that ordeal with anybody else other than the people that helped you through it?
I don't know. I just know that I don't want to be in that spot again. That's bad.
How'd you and your wife meet?
I've known Nikki since I was a young kid. She used to hang out with my brother Adam and Dale. And she went to Saucony Valley also, but she's got 5 years on me. She's 41.
Don't say that.
She don't look it. She looks like she's 31.
You rebounded. Good job.
But we all can agree she does look like she's 31.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's we ended up Mario started helping me.
Okay.
And I didn't know Mario that long.
Right.
But I knew of him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was hanging around the racetrack bringing his kid around. He'd be like, hey, you guys need any help? I'll help you.
So I'm a little bit more outgoing than him. So Mario would message me about where we were racing and I'd be like, come hang out. And he did, and
One thing led to another. Then,
right, and then next thing you know, he's with his sister.
Yeah, I said to Nick one day, I went and got, because she had owned the salon in Cornish, so I went and got my hair cut.
Oh, of course you did.
Which I don't now because I'm bald. But yeah, back then I wasn't.
Yeah, on God's time. Man.
And if he needed a
God gave you
now,
hair at that point.
She could just do it at home.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd go to the salon, and then one somehow I asked her, like, I was driving Moody's car in 2016 at the Oxford 250.
Yeah.
I said, why don't you come up and watch the race?
Yeah, damn it.
So she
you
came
pull
up.
That card, yeah.
She came up.
That's cool.
And,
was she a race fan?
She spent a, her dad worked for Mietis for years, so she spent a lot of time at Beatridge's kids, her and Mario,
okay,
racing. So she liked it when she was a kid. She was never near it until she got with me. Me mm-hmm. and her got together.
Yep.
And I feel like the first year she could have, you know, took it or not took it, but now she loves it.
Yeah. I've been around it a long time, and
Amara's
I've had a few wives.
Let's just cut the audio right there.
For racing. Yeah. And she is awesome. She's so yeah. supportive. She feeds us regardless of where we're racing. Yeah. It's pretty cool. Look, and the crew is always like, oh, what are we having for lunch today?
Yeah.
You know,
no, you got to ask her.
We need airline tickets. We need hotels. Yeah. She's on it. Don't have to ask.
When we go to Hickory, we're there for a week and she's feeding us constantly. It's pretty. It's irreplaceable.
Yeah, you've, I mean, I've known you for a long time, right? And it's been great to see you in your different seasons of life, but you're a completely different man now that you're married and you have a child. It changes a lot of people. It changes yes. almost everybody. But I guess what I'm probably trying to ask is how do you feel that you've changed since you've moved into this season of life as a married man, because you became a father at a, well, I think a little bit later age yeah. than a lot of people have, you know, yeah. with their firstborn. Well, how did fatherhood change you?
I guess it's more or less, I just think about him, you know, what's best for him. And Amara, she's my stepdaughter, but she's still my kid.
Yeah. We can't leave Jim out. She's awesome.
You know, she's, I just think about, you know, supporting them. You know, like I told my crew chief, Josh Burchette, that crew chief's Moody's cars, I told him a few days ago, I said, I got 10 good years to race. That's it. If Talon wants to race, I'm done. It's all on him. I'm focusing on him.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't want to race, that's fine too. But I got 10 good years before he actually can get in a super late model and race.
Yep.
You know, so...
Yeah, I've seen him on the side-by-side. Are you sure it's only 10 years?
Well, he's driving a go-kart, and he's only 3.5 around the driveway all the time.
Yeah.
And does a good
I thought
job
that was a side-by-side. Go-kart, whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little side-by-side because yeah. it is a two-seater.
Yeah. It's cool.
Yeah.
He does a great job. He says he wants to race. I mean, you got to remember he's 3.5.
Right.
He says a lot of things.
Right.
But he's definitely a lot of fun. He enjoys going to the races. He bebops around. He's got little friends there. You know, he's...
Yeah.
It's just
cool.
A good time.
You say your stepdaughter, Amara, she's doing really well in the ladies division.
Yeah.
Who's driving that ship? Who wanted... Did she want to race or did you suggest that? How did that come about?
She said something to her mother one day, a few years back, that she would like to try to race. And I said, well, we can get her a Mad Bomber car or something for Beatridge.
Yeah.
And we let her in it, and she did all right with it. And then we took her up to Oxford and run her in the ladies' league, and she did pretty well. You know, it's a learning curve. She does good. She needs a little help with passing, but she can get a lot out of the car. She can get most of it out of it,
mm-hmm.
up to speed. Last fall, we took my Pro Stock up to Oxford and let everybody and their brother drive them.
Amara was faster
yeah,
than me.
We let Corey yeah. drive it.
Yeah.
She didn't even know how to drive a standard.
No, we just pushed her off pit road and told her to dump the clutch.
Yeah.
And she shifted out on the track, and she was running 16-0s and 16-1s with the car up there.
Jeez.
And then I let Mario try it. Corey tried it. My really good friend Brett Scott that owns Smoker's Haven, he tried it. He's never been in one before. He thought that was awesome. And... little Dan McKegg came up, and he was there that day and drove it. Mikey Mayberry drove it that day.
Wow.
It was kind of like a...
It's too bad you weren't there.
Just yeah. like I just let anybody and everybody, if they want to try the car, never been in one, you know, hop in it.
So you mentioned Smoker's Haven. You said you're not a smoker and you're not a drinker. How do you end up growing weed?
Me and Tony Ricky got into it together. He was in it before I was. He got me into it, and... I just ended up expanding and going to the next level, the next level, the next level, and yeah. and we got good at it. You know, I got a good team. I got 7 employees, and I built some good relationships. My friend Brett, that owns Smokers Haven in New Hampshire, I built a grow for his dad, and after that, Brett said, "Well, I want to get into the retail side of cannabis."
Hmm.
I said, "All right, well, if you do, I want to sell to you."
Yeah.
And he ended up opening some shops up, 2 right in Auburn, and he buys for me all the time. He's my main buyer, and I do a lot with him, and he does a lot with me, and I am some thankful for the friendship and the business.
Yeah. How do you, without any experience, I mean, it blows my mind whether it's cannabis or not. How do you move from an automotive mindset into a completely different realm of sales?
A lot of difference,
and,
huh?
And, you know, craftsmanship. Because, I mean, essentially, I mean it's a craft.
This didn't go good for a year or two.
It was
hard going. And then, you know, we got learning from some other friends. A friend of mine, Travis, was really good grower. He put us in the right direction. And
you started with a hobby stock of cannabis.
I did.
And ended up driving Richard Moody's cannabis.
I just saw the big picture. I'm like, I could make this so much bigger than it is.
Yeah.
And we did. Like, up home, I own the old Walker Chevrolet building mm-hmm. on Route 25. And it's 11,000 square feet. And that's where the threshold of Rejuvenate Canico runs.
Mm.
And that's what supports my racing and my family now. You know, and Nikki's Hair Salon supports the family, too.
Yep. Wow. So, I mean, I've always been curious about how that whole thing came together, because I'm like, I don't think Trevor's a marijuana guy, but he seems to know what he's doing with
it. I've never, ever smoked it. Never tried it.
Yeah. But you don't need to, right?
No, it was more of a business thing to me and a money thing to make money.
Yeah.
And we got good at it.
Yeah.
We met the right connections, the right stores.
It would be like if he decided to go building houses, you know, learn.
Well, you live in a house, though, Corey.
You learn it this way, you know, and you keep working harder and getting better at it.
Yeah, no, I get it.
I don't know what I'd be doing if I didn't do that. I don't know.
Hmm.
I mean, I love the scrap business. That's all I ever knew. Right. I didn't know it.
I think my
dad was out of logging when I was old enough to work for. Like, I never saw none of that. I only saw the scrap business.
Mm-hmm. I think it's neat when someone can have one lane of life and it looks like they're going in that direction, and then boom, out of left field, however life works out, you end up doing this. You love it, because at the end of the day, you have to love what you do,
mm-hmm.
and you're good at it,
yep.
and you can provide for your family, and it's a completely you never saw it coming. You would have never put that down in your yearbook of here's what my life is going to do.
No.
And
no way in hell.
Do you remember your yearbook quote?
No.
No?
No, I don't.
What kind of guy in high school were you?
A little rambunctious.
Yeah.
But
were you good in anything, like academically?
No. No, I didn't play sports because we raced.
Yeah.
But the only thing I liked in school was math and forestry class.
Yeah.
Other than that, I didn't really care for school a whole lot. But I managed to graduate.
Did you go to Lakes Region?
No, Saucopee Valley up in Hiram, South Hiram. And I didn't graduate by... I wasn't even close to the top of the class.
Yeah, me neither.
But,
yeah.
I don't know. We're doing all right now.
So. Yeah, no, that's great, man. So, you know, one of the things we end up talking about quite a bit is the closure of Beechridge. I know that night for you was a little, I think it was that night, that was a little controversial. Was it you and Mike Rowe having a thing that night?
Yes.
Well, what was going, because I know you were really tight in the points.
But that wasn't the night he announced the closure, was it?
No. It was he announced the closure on September 11th, which was, I believe, the last points race. Yeah.
So that night, yeah, me and Mike, I don't know, Mike's Mike, but he ran me around. The championship was between me, Billy, and Dave, I believe.
And Gary Smith. Yeah.
And
Corey Bubar.
Minimal points.
There were 5 guys that had a shot at that last crown.
Yeah, well, Mike run me around like a ragged dog, you know. And I didn't want to get into Mike and move him over because of the chance of him just sliding me back around and me losing the championship anyway. So I tried to do it clean. I never touched him. Ended up finishing behind him. And I've had bad blood with Mike previously because of the whole Richard Moody thing and Ben Rowe not driving and me driving and just... Just whatever. And I was just fed up with it. And that's when I went to the front stretch during happy half hour and...
It was unhappy.
Had a few things to say.
Yeah.
I missed it all because my daughter decided to get married that day.
Oh, right.
So I was at a wedding.
Oh, right. Oh, I remember that day. Yeah, you look pretty sharp there. You're not Freddie, are you?
Yeah, Freddie.
Okay, Freddie, you look sharp that day. Yeah. But, you know, that announcement comes, and of course, I bring that, I kind of paint the picture that way because I know that you were in a certain mindset when all that was going down because it was a night where we were handing out awards, and there was that blood between you and Mike. And then all of a sudden the news is delivered. It's the place where you grew up. It's the place where you got your first win.
Mm-hmm.
It really parlayed your career in driving, I think, at times. What were some of the emotions going through your head when
I was bummed out that it was closing? But in my mind, I knew why. There was a bunch of reasons why, and Andy had his own reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Place was going downhill anyways because of favoritism and a bunch of other bull that was uncalled for.
Right.
You know, and that's the truth. Like, mm-hmm. I know a lot more that went on there than people think, mm-hmm. you know, and it's, I ain't going to say a lot about it, but the favoritism thing was awful.
Mm-hmm.
And people getting extra tires and doing things and, you know... It just wasn't right, so it was probably for the best that
right.
it closed, unless someone else took over. Like I said, Andy Cusack was a great promoter, but on the pit side of things, I don't know if Andy actually knew what was going on and let them people operate the way they did or what. I don't know, but I never asked Andy about that, and it doesn't matter at this point.
So we move on, and we're currently recording this in 2023. It's the end of July, so less than a month from now, the Oxford 250, 50th one. As someone who grew up in Maine, can you tell me about what it was like to stand on the front stretch at your first Oxford 250 when you qualified for it?
I remember the day. I don't remember getting announced and walking across the thing like they always do on the front stretch, but... You know, it was pretty cool to go up there the first time, and Kyle Busch was in that race with us.
Hmm.
I was running third, a lap down. He's second, trying to pass Worf. He blew up going into one right in front of me.
Yep.
It was, I don't know, it was cool. You know, we raced around a bunch of good guys, and it was just a stepping stone. And, you know, I'm excited to go back there this year.
Do you think, you say you have 10 years left.
That's of talent.
Famous last words. We're not holding you to it. I'm certainly not holding you to it. I want you to race for as long as you want to. What would an Oxford 250 win do for your wholeness as a race car driver, for your heart?
I guess it would make me feel better if I won and ended up giving up later down the road as far as just stopping racing, know that I won that race.
Like a Glenn Luce, tried forever.
Yeah.
Finished second to Harvick and then, won a couple years ago beating
but
Reed Lampre.
Oxford 250 is awesome. But now that I'm hooked up with Rick and we're going to run the Berlin race and we're going to go to Nashville, the 400, and, I'd like to go to Pensacola again. For the Derby.
Hmm. Oh, what was that experience like?
I went with Jay. We didn't qualify. We had a good car. The first practice, the opening day that day on a Friday, we were fifth fastest out of like 60. Was it 60 cars? 50 cars?
A lot. Yeah.
And we just went downhill from there, and I couldn't figure out why. But I didn't have a lot of experience then either. You know, totally different animal, different track, different tires. The pavement would wear your tires out in 10 laps.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't know what the heck I wanted or what I needed. And, that was probably the reason we didn't qualify.
Right.
But there's other races that I want to go to before I'm done racing.
Yeah, I think maybe that was the wrong question on my part, but it was phrased with the lens that the Oxford 250 is everything to everybody or anybody who grew up in Maine.
To me,
I've always thought that, Andy.
Mm-hmm.
But... This year's changed my mind a little bit more of some other stuff that went on. So
if he wins it, I'll die happy.
Okay. No pressure.
It's
he didn't get to see my dad's cars go up there, and you couldn't even qualify back then going up there with a Beatridge motor.
Mm-hmm.
With, you know, we were used to racing on clay. And then we, as brothers, missed a bunch of them in the skinny tired act tour.
Right, years. I didn't even go watch it.
I don't know. The race is more important to me than him, but just because I'm old.
As someone who's been around, Corey, I guess this question's more for you, and Trevor, chime in too. You know, the 250 seems to mean a little bit more to Corey than it does you. How difficult were those act skinny tire years, and do you think the 250 is restored to its heritage now?
Yeah, it is.
They still have to be good race car drivers to drive those cars, but the Oxford 250 belongs with a big motor, which we don't have right now.
Bigger than ACT, though.
Yeah.
You know, people aren't going to... This is the unpopular opinion, I'm sure, but you could be a street stock driver getting an ACT car and win. The cars are just so much simpler, easier. I don't know.
So would you say the Oxford 250 as a super late model race is more of a pure driving test?
Of course
test?
It is. It's restored to where it should be.
Okay.
Now. Yeah, and again, I know people think...
Yeah, I love ACT too. I mean, I think they do a great job.
Yeah. I think that's one of the best shows going. I watched that race in, where was it, Chaudière a few weeks ago that Jimmy Renfrew won.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like... in awe at the TV because they bring a podium out there and they got all three drivers up on it.
Yeah, and they have
talking to them and playing their national anthem.
Yeah, I'm like, the show is good. The parody is good because they had 15 races, 15 different winners.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't a knock on ACT, but when it comes to the heritage of the Oxford 250 by someone who's been there for decades.
It belongs where it is right now with this type of car.
Every time we go there, I feel like we got a car that can win. It's just where the circumstances lie on the track.
Yeah.
You know, with anything, lap cars, regular cars, someone spinning out, avoiding wrecks, whatever it is.
We talked earlier tires. About one of your 250s, the one with the pit stop.
Mm-hmm.
Is there one race besides, I assume that's one you want back, is there one race that you want back?
The 300 at Beatridge.
9 laps from the finish.
Mm-hmm.
Without a doubt, he's right.
Yeah. That was a bad day, man.
Yeah.
I'm excited for next year to come at this point so we can actually get out and do some of them bigger races. I want to go to Winchester 400. I want to go to the Derby. I want to go to the Freedom Factory in November down to Bradenton, Florida. You know, there's so many races I'd like to go to that I'll never have a shot to do. I can't do it alone. That's why I signed up with Rick, because we both can do it together.
Hmm.
We have a great tire guy, my brother-in-law. We have a great spotter, Dan Collins. Josh Burchett is a crew chief. Ricky Rolfe is a car chief. Corey is an all-around do-anything, and Mike Libby's the same thing. We have a great...
just an awesome crew.
Is this the best team you ever had?
It is, by far. Our crew chief is the most knowledgeable person I've ever worked with.
Hmm.
And he's had some good ones. I mean, like, we loved working with Tommy Nason and
Tony Ricky.
And Tony Ricky was
very intelligent.
Yeah, I think he's one of the smartest people out there.
Yeah, he is.
Without a doubt. Tony is the best.
He made my race car some fast the 3 years that I was with him.
Mm-hmm.
He did a good job.
Barry Meserve was always very good to us.
Yeah.
You know what? Tony, to this day, even though I don't race with him, we were on the phone today. We're going to do some bear hunting together later on. You know, just keep that thing going. I don't want to ever not be friends with him. You know, when we were done racing, we agreed that we'd still be friends.
What's more important? It seems like I know the answer already, but I'd like to hear you say it, because you don't have a championship.
I know.
Does that bug you?
I ran for the championship two or three years at Beatridge, second two or three times.
Hmm.
Just things didn't fall right. Sometimes, yeah, but I don't really care. I'd rather win races. I want to chase wins, not championships.
Once you cross all those tracks off your bucket do you think your priorities will change back to, well, I need a championship now?
I don't know.
You know, like a Butch Lindley, for example. He loved to chase.
He got the Legend Championship at Beechridge.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Those things are hard to drive.
I think
seven out of ten that year. Those are a lot of fun to race.
Yeah.
Man, are they a handful. Yeah. But that's what make a driver good.
Legend cars.
You know, Austin Terrace, Jay's kid.
Yeah.
He went with Legends with us, and, you know, he does really well. I think that them cars helped him a lot, and... You know, look what he's done. He's won two or three of the last races up to Oxford. He's done a good job.
Yeah. Well, we certainly covered a lot of ground there. I want to thank Trevor and Corey for taking time out of their busy schedule, because it's stupid busy with that Richard Moody Racing 44. And being generous with their time, I think it was time well spent. So for our next guest, or guests, plural, I like what we did with Trevor and Corey, so we're going to double up for the next one as well. From the same era, a guy with over 60 feature wins, 5 track championships, and one of the only Fords to really go at Beech Ridge. But maybe, there's a science to that.
That always got me was, okay, so we're only one Ford, but nobody's ever really bothered to study it up enough to know what... I mean, if I was a tech man, I'd want to study up your crap just to know if I can tell if it's illegal or not. You
right.
Know?
Well,
nobody's ever bothered to, like...
If I'm you, I run illegal because I can.
Letting out trade secrets now.
Well, most of the time...
edit.
It's no, but you know, everybody's like, oh, that stuff's junk. You know, you were never going to win with that crap or nothing. And you start beating them with it, and then, you're cheating.
Oh, this one is... it's a laugh a minute. And it starts next Thursday. It's Cole Watson and Matt Gain on the next episode of Open Trailer Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Austin. Thank you for the support. Talk to you next time.